Okay, we'll call a meeting to order. Today we are the Gretzky Sciences Incorporated contract and other related issues. Was explained the other day, we got into this on House Bill 392, and we thought it was proper that the committee maybe look into this, but we should separate it from the legislation and not necessarily tie it together, but I think it is a legitimate concern of the legislature that some of the state's funds were apparently lost and as to why that happened. So, Bob, do you want to? Bob's been putting together some background information.
Yeah, Linda is in the process of bringing some material on it, and I have it in front of you, but basically, our primary concern is some 70-some plus thousand dollars that the Department of Public Safety lost as a result of one of these contracts, and I think that Terry has taken the position that the Judiciary Committee's primary interest is the possibility of some legislation or at least oversight to make sure that similar things don't happen in the future. The basic problem was that $135,000 was fronted to a corporation which apparently had very little capital resources, no financial history was, or inadequate financial history was done by the department before it fronted $135,000, and the result, some of the $70,000 or more was lost. There also appeared to be some questions in some people's minds, maybe more to it than that, and that perhaps there's some other issues that the state should be looking at, possibly by the Attorney General's office. I think that basically,
you want to run through this with everybody?
Okay.
First. So that I think it's real confusing because there's all kinds of companies and dates and contracts and what have you. So I asked Bob to put together a general outline of that, what we, as far as we can tell, what happened.
How was the vice president fired?
Well, this is most of this information is from written documents that we've obtained one way or the other that were forwarded to us. But I asked Bob to put this together because it was just confusing trying to understand what had actually happened. So, Bob, why don't you just run through it real briefly so that everybody's at least familiar before we start taking testimony as to what we think might or might not have happened.
Okay, we've got the basic situation of, first of all, timeline. That involves sales of corporations, and at least one sales corporation, a lot of name changes by the corporation that finally took over. In 1968, Dr. Michael Byrne started Glass Medical Laboratories, and he sold his company in 1976 to Associated Laboratories of Alaska, which had incorporated a month before that as Anchorage Medical Laboratories Incorporated. James Johnston, Keith Douglas, and David Collins were principals in that corporation and a series of corporations that followed it. There were several name changes that resulted in the formation in November of 1976 of Forensic Sciences Incorporated with the same officers.
Maybe ask questions as we go along.
Certainly.
What was the reason for the shuffling of names?
Well, I don't know.
They were the same principles. Sometimes you shuffle a name and you shed a principle or something like that. Are you shedding people or picking up people?
I think that, well, basically what appears to be happening is that they formed Associated Laboratories Incorporated, which became a holding company for other companies that they started, of which Forensic Sciences was one. They had several different types of laboratories that they were involved with, including some that did apparently some non-medical testing. They did some drug testing, and I think possibly, I haven't had much chance to get into all the details of this just because of lack of time, but I think there was even some veterinary, possibly some veterinary pathology tests and that kind of thing, and testing that wasn't related to medical things, and that was done by other other branches of this thing. And that appears to me to be what the situation is at this point.
Okay, Bob, you were saying that Forensic Sciences is
a wholly owned subsidiary of Associated Laboratories of Alaska. Okay, there appear to be some basic problems with some of the principals involved. They seem to have some conflicts. And in late November of 1976, the vice president of the corporation, who seems to be the principal person involved in all these things, fired Dave Collins, who was the president. And later, they eventually bought him out, is what they did. But it was in February of 1977 that they entered into the first of two contracts. They entered into there were actually three contracts that they entered into with the state. One of them was with the Alaska court system, one of them was with the Department of Public Safety, and the other one was with the Psychiatric Institute. Apparently that one, there were no problems with that, so I've left that one out. But the contract they entered into with the Alaska court system was done on a bid-type system, and apparently it was a blind bid-type thing, in which the court system sort of went fishing for the best deal that they could get. As a result, there were two bids received. One of them was by Drs. Rogers and Probst, and the other one was by
So could you take a quick rest on that? It was the Alaska Clinic was the bidder. It was not the Rogers Clinic.
Okay, the last Forensic Sciences was the other one that bid on the contract. They got it apparently due to a stipulation under the sort of an other category in which they offered to build a laboratory by May 1st of 1977. Collins signed the contract for Forensic Sciences and that. And according to Snowden, Mr. Snowden, on March 29th for the Judiciary Committee, it was sort of an open bid or blind bid type situation. Now, the basic situation is that they didn't have a laboratory by May 1st, 1977, and according to tests or to statements off the record by some of the principals involved in this, some of the information that I've received, there may never have been any intention of building a laboratory. Some of the information that I've received is that the company went far as asking a contractor to develop architectural designs. Those were submitted to the court system and approved by the court system, apparently. And after that point, after the contract was signed, they went back to the contractor and canceled all further services with that contractor, and I have the contractor's name. Now, on July 1st, 1977, they entered into a second contract. This one was with the Department of Public Safety, and this is where the state lost money eventually. They were supposed to perform lab analysis for the state troopers, and this included autopsies and various other tests that public safety people would be interested in. And they received $62,000 in advance from the bank for assigning the rights of the income from the Department of Public Safety contract. There were two alternatives given for forensic sciences in the contract. One was for $142,000 some hundred dollars, they were given the amount in advance. They were out of the Department of Public Safety asked what kind of discount they could get, according to the testimony before the committee. And they were given, the state was given a $6,000 discount on the basis of receiving or giving $135,000 to the company. Apparently there was some investigation by the Department of Public Safety into the financial history of the company, but very little. Apparently there was some investigation of employees, but none of the principals in the corporation were investigated themselves. At this time, the company itself may have been capitalized as little as $1,000. They applied for several loans at that point. And this is, my information on this is very shady, so, or shaky. So I would rather not get into that at this point. But they apparently did get into an arrangement with a company down in Tacoma, Washington. This is this FMS, Financial Management Systems. And they paid something like $6,000 or $6,300 for this company to go hunting for further financing. And apparently this company was a fly-by-night outfit that has since, the state has since issued cease and desist orders for operation by this company in Alaska. Apparently Alaskan businessmen have lost something over $100,000 to this company, according to the information I've got. It was as a result of various incidents and actually at this point unknown situations that eventually the company went belly up. And the list...
You're saying Forensic Sciences, Inc.
Forensic Sciences, Inc. went
What was that?
That was in September, before September 1st of 1977, which is about 4 months after they got $135,000 from the state. And two employees of the company have stated that at the time that they left, they were fired from the company in August, that there was still in their account for the company something like $100,000 to $115,000. The question is, what happened to that money? Or one question is, what happened to that money during 30 days of August, 31 days? There seem to be some other questions which I don't want to get into at this point because they're just questions that have been brought up by people and which I don't have the answers for, but which indicate that some of the money may have gone out of state illegally and been funneled out of state. This is something that I don't know for sure, but I think that the committee should be, this is one thing that the committee should be interested in finding out. The Department of Public Safety and the Alaska State Troopers apparently have started their own investigation of this. Curiously enough, the investigation started after the March 29th hearing that the Judiciary Committee held on this. And I don't know, again, on the record, I don't know what they found out on this, although I heard from secondhand sources that the troopers have found enough evidence that some of the money was funneled out of state. They are interested in the situation. However, I think that it's my opinion that since the Department of Public Safety was involved in this, that, and also Alaska court system was involved in this particular situation. An independent investigation deserves to be done. And I think it's the committee to decide who is going to do that investigation. But I think that having the Department of Public Safety investigate this is like putting the fox in charge of the hen house. That's basically the situation as I see it right now.
Do any committee members have any questions about some of the stuff we went over? Obviously, we're going to get into it more in the announcement.
Why doesn't that fox look at the hen house?
Well, we'll hear from him in a minute. Maybe hear from...
Hear from
Mr. Barrier first from the court system. I guess, Rick, why don't you sit up at the end table? I guess we just... as everybody can see, there's just all kinds of things that happen, and it's a little difficult trying to really piece together what happened. So I guess I'd just like you to tell us what you know of the company and the things that you may have learned while you were negotiating the company, and the sequence of events that you know about that led the court system to say, okay, we're cutting off with this organization, and you know, and any information you may have about that relates to this.
Okay. I'll try to give you 3 or 4 minutes. Right, sir. We first became aware of Forensic Science, I think, in the fall of 76, at which time we had put out a bid for autopsy services for the court. The reason we went to bid...
Mr. Chairman, I don't think Mr.
Barrier
has been
formally identified. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Rick Barrier, the Deputy Director of the Alaska Court System from Anchorage.
Thanks.
In any event, we went out for bid on autopsy services as a result primarily of a request from the Alaska Clinic to increase your fee substantially. They wanted to get a sole source contract, and they were the only ones doing this work at the time. We said, fine, you can have a sole source contract, but before we do that, we want to see if, I mean, you can have a contract to do all the work, but first, I want to see if anyone else is available to do it. And we had no idea at the time that there was anyone. We heard it was Dr. Makar, who was coming out shortly from the Air Force. Anyway, we just put out this bid and sent a notice to anybody that was interested, all the pathologists in the state, anyone else, who said we're going to see if anybody would like to do this service for us and what they'd charge for it. As Art probably told you, it was a rather loose kind of bid. If we want autopsy services to provide this and this and this, and anything else that you'd like to do for us, we'd be fine. But we didn't really know what they could do. So we did receive two bids, one from Alaska Clinic, one from FSI. My office was responsible for analyzing the bids, did a fiscal analysis of both, ended up virtually identical in cost rejection. I think FSI was about $3 more than per autopsy than the Alaska Clinic rejection on the actual dollars paid out. In addition, then, FSI said they would build a morgue for the state in a few months afterwards, and if they did, that would save $50 per case that we're paying to physicians to use in their facilities. So what transpired then was as follows. FSI had presented us with a proposal, presented with it with Dr. St. Matthews, who was the pathologist they suggested they would put on the job.
He wasn't then working for them.
He was not working for them. He was still in Seattle at the time and not moved to Alaska and get down there.
Well, did that fact make any difference?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, we had heard of Mr. Matthews already. He'd done work for the district attorney and I don't know who else, you know, prior to the time moved to Alaska. And just, we'd heard he was a good doctor. And matter of fact, this is more history. Alaska Clinic had at one time approached St. Matthews to bring him up to work for them, which I think was their plan. They wanted to get a sole source contract, bring him up, and do the whole thing. But then he ended up going to work for the other organization, and that created definitely some hard feelings between the organizations. I assure you that. But anyway, well, we were concerned somewhat that he was out of state and, as far as the doctoring goes. So we did do a fairly extensive background search on St. Matthews and talked to everyone that knew anything about him in his past. and were quite assured that he was an excellent doctor, and we had no problem with him. And in fact, it turned out to be the case. He did an excellent job under this contract for the court, professionally and whatever. I think I've heard no complaints about any of the work he did before the court, and later on. Well, in any event, we met with both groups to discuss the bids after they came in, and the clinic was advised, Lesser Clinic was advised, it was Morgan thing, and Dr. Rogers said he didn't want to do that, and think it was proper for a private Morgan to be built. I said, well, that's your opinion. And if we, and he said, it's going to cost the state a lot of money. I said, well, it can. The contract, they're going to do it, and it's not going to cost us anything. They're just going to provide us part of the contract. So we came down to deciding what to do. Staff of our office got together and discussed it, recommended to our director, Mr. Snowden, that we accept the FSI contract for basically two reasons. First, I, in my own mind, excuse me.
Go ahead. Bob, I have a question.
Okay.
Didn't it seem a little bit unusual that they were offering to build a laboratory at no cost to you?
Well, we discussed that with them. Some lengths too. I mean, how they could do it, and though we did not, you know, go into analyzing their figures, which obviously would have been a good idea in hindsight, they had given us some idea, and we talked to Sam Matthews about it too, and he had developed some concepts in Seattle of how to put together a morgue that it wouldn't necessarily be a terribly expensive structure, and operationally, you can do it without having, you know, a large staff and that sort of thing. So they alleged, anyway, they'd built that cost into their $240 per case charge they would give the court, that they had enough in there to cover the overhead. They were concerned about getting, and they did push to get a 2 or 3 year contract with us, which we did not go for. We gave them, I think, a contract for the rest of that year, which would be 4 or 5 months through the following fiscal year. But they said there was enough money in there to build this morgue and amortize it out. So we didn't question it, and we weren't particularly concerned, because we didn't, at that time, see a lot of risk other than losing the potential of this $50 savings if it wasn't built. And the contract had an out clause that they didn't perform, and 30 days notice we could cancel it or whatever. So we looked at it as that we would be getting what appeared to be, well, he was the only certified forensic pathologist that was presented as a doctor in the bid process. Dr. Rogers and Dr. Probst at that time were not forensic pathologists. Only certified as, I guess, a clinical pathologist. Since that day, Dr. Probst has gone out and now is certified as a forensic pathologist. But anyway, just his background, education, experience as a coroner for Seattle, whatever, seemed to indicate that he would be professionally would be a good person to have. The bids were very comparable, as I said, in cost, and then the sort of the, you know, an aside, but a very nice aside, was that if more went in, we would say, you know, $20,000 a year perhaps, over what the actual cost would be with the Alaska Clinic. And we felt that, and at that point we had no indication there would not be a morgue. And they were very positive about it. They had all these ideas and they were going to do it. And so we assumed it would be coming in and we would save this money over time. So we thought we were looking at a contract that would be considerably cheaper and at least as good and perhaps a higher quality of professional work. So our recommendation to our director was that we accept the bid. He discussed it with the Supreme Court in June, and they were aware of there was quite a controversy over the whole thing when the Alaska Clinic became aware of our, you know, thoughts about the thing, that we were seriously considering the other site. It was quite a campaign on their part. Themselves and Evergreen Memorial Chapel and a few other people came out in mass trying to drag up as much as they could about the whole thing. And we investigated every kind of complaint that they could give us, and none of it was found in fact, and when we got through, we felt even better about the decision that, yeah, this, we see no problem that we can end anything. Now, we did not look into the financial end of it, I guess partly because we knew that it had been a medical lab, had been there for some time, and I guess just assumed that it was an ongoing thing, and we were giving them what we thought was a decent contract, and we assumed they'd get something out of the trooper, so they were talking to them as far as a, you know, ongoing contract, so we assumed they would be viable organization, so we did not look into their finances per se. And again, we weren't that worried because we didn't see that there was that much risk on our part.
Did you look into it
even to the extent of finding out that this company had been in existence for less than a year at that time?
Oh, yes. We knew that this was a new organization that had bought out Mike Byrne from Alaska Medical Lab. We knew that history. We assumed that Mike would, you know, only sell his firm to someone that would... Mike did, too.
I think Mike has some things to say about it.
Yeah. Again, we thought not as a new organization, but as a going concern, even though it was a new set of principles. And in talking to these individuals, I mean, you didn't get the feeling that they were, you know, we just had a feeling they were fairly young, aggressive kind of people trying to put together this corporation, and they had a lot of good ideas. And we thought that it would probably work, and we didn't see any reason that they would fail. We didn't check to see that maybe only had $1,000 in the bank and that they were undercapitalized or had other intentions, but we had no reason to believe that at the time. The bid was awarded, and shortly thereafter we received a new bid from Alaska Clinic that was $50 less than the original bid.
$50 per
case less. I mean, it was substantially cheaper. It was much cheaper than they'd been charging us before, and half as expensive as what they wanted. So. We said, well, we're sorry, it's already been awarded to FSI, and their attorney was on our cases writing us and saying you guys are not treating us fairly, but we thought we had, and we tried to follow a fair procedure, give everybody a chance, and it was only after we told them we were awarding it to FSI that we got this new offer in for $190 an autopsy, which we wrote back and said, we're sorry, I mean, it's already done. If you could have done it for $190, we wish you would have told us, and we would have probably
awarded
you the
contract.
You said
at the point that you got this new bid from him, you'd already signed the contract?
I'd have to check the dates on the letter that came in, Terry. It could be, I believe the Supreme Court had approved it. The contract may not have been finalized at the time, but I know that it was a final decision to be reached.
Could
I'll
you make
check,
it a point of
yeah.
giving us those dates?
Yeah, I'll do that. And also, I found it hard. Well, anyway, I couldn't see how they would. That's where I was sort of incredible. I couldn't believe that they would do it for $190. Anyway, I mean, it seemed, given what they had just said that they needed to raise their fees to make a go of it, that they were coming back and cutting their fees back by $50 a case. It seemed, I found kind of amazing. But anyway, I certainly would have accepted the bid. I think a lot easier. You know, if they'd started out with $190, I would have said, that looks pretty good. I know they're substantially cheaper than the apparent out-of-pocket cost of the FSI contract, but it didn't. Theirs was $237 was their bid. And we also felt that we had asked people what they would do it for, and people put in their best shot, and that's what we went with. So. The whole experience was not very pleasant, and it'd be very nice, I would say this personally, if we could ever get this medical examiner bill passed, have a medical examiner that's a doctor that can deal with these people and work these things out. Because we're sitting there as administrators trying to decide which doctor to hire and how to deal with these morticians and all that. And we're not set up for that kind of thing. It's just a real struggle. And I'll just have to say personally, I would like nothing better than to see this done by a professional or by a doctor.
What was the actual date when you canceled the contract?
If I remember properly, it was in, I think Art wrote an official letter in November, I believe, was the date. We met with them, many times during the summer. They presented us, I think it's pointed out, on two or three different occasions, different plans for facilities. That was the other thing. They came up with, I would say, 4 to 5 different concepts of where and how they were going to build this mortuary, and all of which seemed fairly plausible because, I mean, the court has had times when it's taken 2 or 3 years, or I think in the case of Glen Allen, maybe 4 years, to get a little change done because you keep coming up with new ideas, a different way, a better way, delays in construction, whatever. So, you know, it seemed logical to take them a few months to get it all together, and we weren't that concerned about it actually happening until later on in the summer it became apparent that nothing was happening. So we met them then and said, you've got until next date, whatever date that was, I think it was sometime 1st of November, I think was the date, to get this thing started and show us you've got a lease or something going or what you're going to be through. And so the date came and nothing happened, so we wrote them a letter and said that that's the end of the contract. But through the throughout the process, at least certainly for the first several months, it appeared that they were acting in good faith, that they were trying to come up with a plan that would work, and we had no indication that that it wasn't going to happen.
Mr. Carpenter?
Thank you. Mr. Barrier, did the court system lose a dime or more on this?
Well,
I guess I have to say we probably lost, I think we lost something. The least we lost would have been what we projected to be a $3 per case savings had we gone with the Lasky Clinic, given the circumstances. So that would have been as much as maybe, say, $1,000 or something we lost had we taken the other bid. And then we lost the potential savings of over, say, a six-month period of maybe $10,000 or something that we would have saved had we paid morticians for the use of the funeral home. Actual out-of-pocket loss would have been maybe $1,000 if we'd taken the other bid.
The court system paid case by case.
We would approve each bill was approved by the coroner who submitted and then we wrote a check. So there's no estimate. Anyway, I don't know. I guess there's probably some holes in there. But any questions?
Well, I would like to leave things open to call you back for further testimony, but I would like to have the date on which the contract was canceled. I believe that Mr. Snowden may have given that to us at our last meeting, when he testified briefly before, but I want to make sure.
If you like, what I'll try to do is put together a package of materials. I'm sorry, I thought you probably would have had these. I thought the art may have brought them down or something, but because I didn't bring them with me. But I have a folder that has some letters and things that would show what happened, so I'll get this together. Art will be coming down, I think, Sunday night. Anyway, so I asked him to bring with you, but Monday he'll give you one.
You've kind of gone through the formal things of what happened. Now, what do you know besides that? I mean, obviously, being involved with the people, you must have heard something about that they were going broke and all that. And what's your understanding about what was going on?
Okay. Put it all into light. First off, from the very beginning, the first time we met them or knew of them, we were constantly bombarded by information, in quotes, from the Lasky Clinic and from Evergreen Memorial Chapel. They both were right on their case and just telling us everything in the world about them. You know, there's a bunch of bums, ain't going to do nothing. St. Matthew's is a crook or something. I don't know what their terminology was, but everything was just, So what happened, we checked out everything that they said and it all turned out to be basically a bunch of baloney. Now, later on, they kept this up the whole time. I mean, for a year. Well, for basically a year, I've done nothing but listen to our friend Dave Frank. On the phone, he calls me up an hour or two at a time and just harangues me about all this stuff. So anyway, to put that into context, he was always saying there's a problem. Dr. Rogers would call me sometimes and say there's a problem. And so after a while, you figure, well, I don't know. But it wasn't until the summertime that we started to hear sort of more concrete sort of things that, there's a financial problem.
Where were those? What were those?
I'm trying to, most of my communication probably came sort of informally through the coroner in Anchorage, Dolores Wilkes, who deals with all the doctors quite a bit. And she, I talked to her quite a bit about the bills and things like that. And so in our conversations, I believe that's probably where I got some of the message that seemed to be having a problem, And in fact, they were at the time, I imagine, because we checked, and they weren't getting very many bodies, in sort of a gruesome detail, but there weren't many people dying during the summer. The body count had dropped off from maybe 40 or 50 down to 12 or 15 a month. And so, logically, I could see that they'd be having a cash flow crunch. So for me, it seemed logical that they were having financial problems. The extent of the problem, I really didn't know anything about until as it got into...
Were they waiting for hunting season?
I don't know what was going to happen, but it's just a cyclical thing. Sometimes the body, like in Fairbanks for a while, there were just bodies all over the place, and then it slacks off and it comes back up. I don't know, it sort of just varies. And they weren't prepared for this time when there wasn't much cash. I mean, the difference in 15 and 50 bodies is $6,000 or $7,000 a month, and that makes quite a bit of difference in your cash flow. So I assumed that was their main problem. I wasn't aware of any major problems with 50s or hundreds of thousands of dollars or something disappearing, or, you know, that sort of thing. I just felt like they were doing a lot, and it was fairly tight for them, and therefore they needed cash. During the summer there were times when Keith Douglas would come over and request that we expedite payments and get it out because they had to meet payrolls and things like that. I knew that they were struggling financially there during the summer. But they still, at that time, indicated that they were working towards several different plans during the summer on the morgue. I would think of, I think, five separate plans they came up with, as I said, during that time period. And I assume, from what you said, it must have all been... Well, I still can't believe it was all... It started out as an intentional smokescreen, but in fact, maybe it was. I mean, I felt like they were trying in good faith and just couldn't pull it all together. They kind of just, you know, blew it. But if, in fact, investigation shows that they were ripping it off and sending it down south, well, then I just misjudged the characters. I mean, I felt like they were trying all the time. And I had some very long, hard talks with Keith Douglas about the whole thing. He had considered the only way he could have kept the contract was to get that mortgage up, because we said it had to be built. And he was discussing with me the feasibility or what was going to happen with the medical examiner bill. Would the contract be continued in the future? And could he get any guarantees? Because he'd need that before the banks would give him any money. And he was talking about putting a lot of his own cash into it and money to get this thing built so it could be a going thing. And just talking to the guy for hours about it, I never felt like he was just trying to rip us off. It seemed like he was trying, you know, and he was very, very concerned, you know, sort of approach. I think I advised him properly, but I told him that, no, there's no guarantee that you have the contract and there may be a medical examiner and this morgue could end up being a white elephant. Alan, also see what happens the same thing. Happens at the same time is we got the rumor, and I don't know, again, I always get these rumors, that it was either the Alaska Clinic, I think it was them, or some of their principals, or the forensics are, Dave Frank, were going to build their own morgue, okay, a competing morgue against this other one, or something. So this concept evolved somewhere, you know, and it just became certainly what it amounted to is that they told me they had it lined up to lease this facility and get a morgue put in, but then this other thing came up and that there was going to be another morgue, and the bank had heard about it because Dave Frank had called him and told him that there's going to be another morgue and you shouldn't give money for this morgue because this other one's going to take all the business or something. I mean, it was just a lot of stuff happened in there that was just bizarre. And so, you know, it was...
I think we've got down to the bottom of it. Bizarre.
Oh, no, well, I think it's a very interesting story. I still don't feel myself that there was...
But isn't the point that, you know, you just thought he seemed like a nice guy, but, I mean, you didn't really have any evidence that he was doing anything other than that he came over and saw you and told you he was.
Well...
I mean, did he show you, look, we spent $10,000 hiring an engineer to design this facility, we put earnest money on this piece of property? Was there any solid evidence that he was doing anything?
We did have a meeting where he presented a set of plans for the structure to go buy the building. That was all, you know, whatever. He brought in a real estate agent who sat down and we discussed it. The agent was ready to close on this lease deal, on their final plan out on the, was that off of Tudor somewhere out there? I forget. Anyway, he brought in this realtor, and we sat there discussing it because the realtor had to go to advise his client whether he thought he could keep it for several years or whether it'd be just a year or two, kind of a morgue. And unless the realtor was a sham or something, it sure seemed that really had, you know. I mean, everything. I mean, it wasn't just phone calls and sort of telling about. He'd come over and talk, and you know, I thought it showed some rather physical evidence that they were trying. And that's why I always felt like up until, well, even at the very end, the last in September, October, whatever, I think that's when he was really struggling trying to find a way to put it together so that the corporation wouldn't go under. And that's where I advised him that I can't commit that you're going to have this contract for 5 years. You may have it only for another 8 months and put your own, all your own money into it, you know, do what you like. But so I think he just decided to bunch it. Now, I don't know. That's again just my personal opinion.
There's one thing that I'd like to make clear from my standpoint, and that's that I'm not trying to impinge on the integrity of anybody. But I've heard enough evidence that I think that it justifies an investigation.
Yeah. Well, if what you said about the dollars is true, I mean, and the timing, I didn't realize that the public safety, first off, didn't contract until July, and they didn't get their check until August or something, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were bankrupt or out of, down the tube by October or November. I mean, that, you know, that can be a lot of payroll, but that's still pretty fast loss of money. So that, yeah, that to me would cause concern. I thought they had the contract, say, in February or even January with the these guys and sort of you know lost it as it went, but they only had all that money for 3 or 4 months. So that to me would be grounds to look into it. I can't see any reason not to. But who are you looking at heaviest here? Or
figure that out. Oh, I'm not saying
you.
No, we're not looking at anybody heavy. Yeah. I mean, we wanted to talk to you because obviously you might. You knew something about it. So we're asking everybody. We're not singling anybody out. It's more of what happened than who did it.
I think the intention is to bring as many people who were involved as possible.
Yeah.
Try to find out what happened.
I could say, I think I could safely say this, that if it was an honest failure of a business, that I think part of their problems would have come from some of the bad press and bad mouth they were getting from the other side. And if in fact they were a dishonest bunch, which something never came back, we never heard that per se, that they were crooks tripping off the money. And if they were, that's fine. If they weren't, I think that they were, you know, I guess the evidence will show whether they were bad or not or whatever. But if they weren't, I think they were treated unfairly by some of the Anchorage community. And if not, then maybe they got what they deserved or are going to get what they deserve. I don't know.
Mr. Carpenter, why is the House Judiciary Committee doing this?
Well, it's just my feeling, Larry, that, you know, it was something that came up in the context of the bill, and I said it seemed to me that it really wasn't part of the testimony on the bill, but it was an issue that came up. And I don't know if it's worthwhile looking into whether the state lost money or not. You know, hopefully the state would have been looking into it, and evidently they are. And I'd just like to make sure that they are going to look into it. And maybe this will help them along their way. We'll get enough information that maybe, because at one point, you know, we came in and it was just a story of, well, we made a bad business deal for the state. So what? You know, we learned we won't do that again. But I think that there is probably some evidence to indicate that you know, maybe there's something more to it. Maybe it was the state was defrauded and something ought to be done about it more than just say, you know, we lost the money. And, you know, I think it's always appropriate to find out what happened, you know.
Then the goal is to, one possibility is the purpose of leading to a criminal prosecution.
Well, if there was one justified, I don't know. Maybe there isn't one justified. I haven't decided that in my own mind.
Okay, but if that's one of the goals, or a possible goal, are we constituted properly to do that, and are we proceeding properly?
Well, we can always hold a hearing and just ask people to testify. You know, at some point people might not want to tell us to testify, then we could subpoena them or something.
Well, for example, I'm new here, so I've never participated in one of these. However, it seemed to me if you were building a case for the chief prosecutor or for a grand jury, and the hearing record of this committee was going to be turned over to someone like that, that it would be helpful if you had sworn testimony.
We've talked about that too.
Yeah, that might be appropriate at some point.
And I don't say anything wrong with it, but if you're going to ask the kind of question you asked a moment ago of Rick, you begin to get into the areas, or could get into the areas of reputations and so forth, and it's not a casual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yeah, I think it's a good point you brought it up. We have talked about that and found out what authority this committee had to do that. We would have to request the body, the House, to be able to do that.
To do an actual...
At this stage, I don't feel like we're quite at that point. You know, I figure we're just finding out what happened, and you know, once we've got some more, it's so confusing. I can't figure out what happened, or if anything happened. And I guess that's what I want to find out first, is what happened. So I asked Bob to try to put together a chronology of who, what, and when. Be an idea. So.
Just one other question in that area. You don't think then that there's some more appropriate avenue for this to be done than to have this committee do it? I'm not suggesting it shouldn't be done.
At this point, I don't think there is. I mean, at some point when we have a little more concrete idea, I mean, I couldn't recommend to anybody what they should do at this point. No. I couldn't write a letter to the Attorney General's office and say, why aren't you doing X, Y, and Z? Because I don't know what they should do other than, cause I'm not too clear what happened yet.
Oh, we wouldn't, could we conceivably be jeopardizing a good case for the prosecution?
I don't know. How many people are going to perjure themselves?
If, you know, I always believe bad guys should go to jail, and I wouldn't want to do something that would cause bad guys not to go to jail.
I don't know, maybe we'll ask that question in a bit. Okay, thank you, Rick. I don't know if you wanted, I talked to you earlier today, I didn't know if you wanted to give us any information about what you knew about this company. That might be helpful, since you knew some of the people involved.
Well, I seem to be a central figure.
Well, I didn't see you as a central figure, Mike, but I saw you.
If you want to put yourself in that position.
You said you knew something about some of these people. I thought maybe you could help us out if you knew what these people were going through. And
okay, well, for the record, Representative Mike Byrne testifying. I sold to these fellows in 1976. I'd been negotiating with them for about, 6 months or a year. I knew two of the three buyers quite well. Fellow Collins had been out at the Air Force Base for a number of years and was reputable. Dr. Makar, the pathologist, had been out there a couple of years, and I knew him, and he was reputable and a good man. Douglas, the third party, was unknown to me, but I did check his references out in Seattle. People that he'd given me, school he went to, and those references were quite satisfactory. They seemed to be a bunch of, three of them seemed to be young and bright, hardworking, and seemed to have good reputations. They didn't have any capital, and I wanted to sell because I wanted to go on to bigger and better things. We'll know in August whether I did or not. But I decided to sell to them on a note basis with no cash down, which is what I did. And I think I gave a 15-year payoff or something like that with a 6 months or so no payments at all. I mean, everything to try to help them get started. And there were some problems with the laboratory at the time because I hadn't been paying as much attention to it as I should have, and they were going to have to work hard at it. But the opportunity was there for them, and it was a good one. And I thought by making them, they seemed to be good buyers. You know, everything seemed to be fine. So I went ahead and sold to them on that basis. I did secure their personal guarantees from all three of them. Then they reorganized, almost immediately after they bought the laboratory. They organized the Associated Laboratories of Alaska Incorporated, which then became the parent corporation, and I think the corporation I sold to them, Alaska Medical Laboratories, plus another corporation they formed, Forensic Sciences Incorporated, became the subsidiary corporations. And I think they may have had another corporation or two also, but I don't know the details on that. It was a business risk for me to sell to them, but on the other hand, I thought it was a reasonable risk based on everything I could ascertain at the time. And I didn't have any other buyers at that particular time, and I did not want to keep on operating the laboratory, so I did sell to them. Then, as they reorganized, that was okay with me because I still had their personal guarantees on it. And then they moved the laboratory from a building that I owned and had operated the laboratory for many years. And I didn't like that very well, and talked to them about it quite a bit and discouraged them because I thought they were getting in over their heads. But they were young and pretty headstrong and wanted to do it. And I still had their personal guarantees, so I didn't object anymore. I couldn't have stopped them anyhow legally. I probably should remark that I operated the laboratory for about 11 or 12 years as a sole proprietorship, or as my sole business, until 68, at which time I incorporated it. So I just sold them my stock in the corporation is what I did. As time progressed there, they weren't into it very long, and within 6 months I could see that they had a little trouble. And then within a year's time I knew that they were in serious trouble, but I didn't want to take the laboratory back over at that time, and I still didn't think they would lose. I still thought they'd be able to make a success of it. Douglas, by that time, had emerged as the manager and the president and the honcho of the operation, and he was clearly in command of making all the decisions. I followed many of their activities along, but I never knew all what was going on, only what they told me. When they wanted something, they would come in and ask me if I would release them from paying their monthly debt that they owed me and something of that sort, and they'd give me some information, and that's the only type of information I had. But a month or two before closing, they came to me and indicated they had a Small Business Administration guaranteed bank loan coming up. And their attorney, Jim Johnson, was with them. And what they wanted me to do was to exchange the note and their guarantees for stock options, which would permit them to get their money from the bank. And the stock option, gave me clearly control of the corporation. If at a later time they failed to pay off, I could exercise my option to take over the corporation again. Well, I didn't like that at the time, but it seemed like that was the only way they could survive, and I knew that they needed the bank loans. I felt that they'd learned quite a bit in business, particularly about expanding and too fast and too many people on the payroll and trying to do too many things at once. And I thought that if they could make it into the second year, they'd probably survive. So I agreed to do that with them, but I checked with the bankers and so forth to make sure that they were in fact applying for a loan, and the loan was imminently forthcoming and so forth, and everything seemed to be in order. So I decided...
Mike, about what time was this?
I'd have to check my notes in the files at home.
Would this be like the summer though, Jim?
Yeah, it was during the summertime. And the bankers indicated to me that they were in fact applying for the loan and had submitted most of their documents. They expected the loan to be made, and they expected the Small Business Administration to approve it and so forth. So everything did seem to be quite in order. So I agreed to do that with them by releasing them from their personal guarantees and their notes, and that, accounting-wise, set up, changed the liability, a note liability, over to a stock column. And they were able to show them that they didn't actually owe that amount of money to me. So the bank liked that concept very well. So I did it. Well, then very shortly thereafter, and I can't tell you how soon afterwards it was, but it seems to me it was only about a month or two at the most, they were closing up. And the taste I had in my mouth at the time was that... perhaps they knew that they were going under at the time, and that they were, in effect, selling me stock in a corporation, even though it was only the option type. It was selling me stock in a corporation that was already, defunct, and they were really trying to escape their personal guarantees on it. I didn't sue them or didn't take any action on them because, first of all, I didn't want to take the corporation back over, and wasn't in a position to do it. Didn't want to. And second was that I wasn't sure, really in my own mind, but what they were, that they just had made a whole series of poor business judgments, for mistakes, and that they might in fact be honest, And thirdly was that I didn't think that if I sued them, I'd get anything, because I didn't think they had anything, But I still have the option to do that, and I've and I might down the trail do that yet. If I think they have any assets, and that particularly if I think that they just were seeking to avoid the responsibilities of their guarantees, then I would sue them to try to recover. And that's just about it.
What happened to the bank foreclosed on their property, and they got at least a bunch of their property, as we understood, and Public Safety then bought part of it in auction, and they bought part of it back themselves under the name of another company.
Right. They set up a new company. I think it's called Reference Laboratory. I don't know the name of the corporation, but I think they're operating under the name of Reference Laboratory there in Anchorage. And to the best of my knowledge, they're doing well in the business, doing adequately in the business. They're surviving. And they have, I think there's just Dr. Ray Carr and Mr. Douglas who left now in that business, plus some employees. And they bought out a lot of the equipment from the defunct companies. Now, to the best of my knowledge, they never did go bankrupt. You see, I think they just closed operations down. Told the creditors that they didn't have anything, and the creditors sued that they really, couldn't get anything anyhow. Looked to me as if it was going to be very complicated, and it certainly was complicated because there were several corporations there. And I suspected probably I couldn't win anything and couldn't get blood out of a stone, so I didn't want to waste any monies on attorneys until I could see what happened.
Michael,
what's the matter with
you? I don't mind spending money on attorneys if I think it's for a good cause.
Oh.
I certainly do admire and respect attorneys. I need them.
Thank you.
I got four lawsuits going now, and I don't know anything without attorneys. Always seems that way.
Mike, do you have any, the one thing that seems to, doesn't quite fit in, or at least that there's no way of knowing what exactly happened, is that it was in, late August when the public safety, is that the right date when you actually paid over $135,000?
August 1st, I believe.
August 1st?
Right, close to it.
The money was paid over $135,000 cash on August 1st, and yet, and by that time, they were evidently winding down the corporation's activities, but there's really no record of what happened to the money, and suddenly they're bankrupt, and they still owe everybody else, so evidently they didn't pay everybody off. And I wondered if you had any ideas or any knowledge as to what might have actually happened to that money.
No, I don't, but I'd be very curious about what happened. I just don't know. I know they use some of it to pay off some of their pressing creditors. I know that. And
do you have any idea what amounts of money you were talking about there?
I recall that they indicated they had paid off some monies they had paid off some monies to some people. They were small amounts of money though. And that, my recollection is that the bulk of the monies were still intact probably at least two-thirds of them or half of them or two-thirds of them were intact up until during my last conversations with them. So then when they closed down, I thought they'd still have some money left over in what I would term would be a trust account. Mm-hmm. But apparently they didn't.
At what time did you say that at what date are you talking about when you thought that they still had that amount of money as an asset?
Well, at the time I made my agreement with them, which again I don't know the exact dates, but it was in the summertime there. I think it was after they received the monies from the state. I'm quite sure it was. Well, then I made my agreement with them, and then it was probably a few weeks after that. I know they still had money, because I remember they're telling me they still had money, but they felt that they couldn't use that money because they needed that to fulfill their terms of their contract. And I was impressed by the fact that they were holding on to the money. But I was impressed by the fact and remembered it because of it. That they were holding on to some, the bulk of those funds to honor that contract. because I knew that they could spend it for anything they wanted to spend it for at that moment.
But you don't really have any knowledge of what exactly that money was expended for.
No. Oh, I have no. I never saw their books and never looked at their books, never investigated them at all.
Okay. Did anybody have any question like that, Dr. Rick? Larry?
Related to that. Do we know if the IRS is in this at all?
Well, we haven't heard from them. We heard from the IRS. Do we know if the IRS
they're
is
there?
I have heard that the IRS has become interested. I don't know any details.
Then
I just heard that.
Mike
I just heard that secondhand. So I can't say.
Mr. Barron?
Can I ask you a question? Do you know, did they get the Small Business Administration loan?
I beg your pardon?
Was that loan approved, and did they get the money from the...
No, that's another very confusing story. You know, as you get into every one of these, they become very confusing and very conflicting and so forth. And it seems that for some strange reason that the bank never actually placed the application with SBA for approval. So I recall Mr. Douglas telling me. And that was one of the prime reasons why they failed to get their loan. And if they'd received their loan timely, that they could have survived. And, you know, they might have, I don't know. But I know that Mr. Douglas told me that the banks had placed the loan over at SBA's office for approval. And then afterwards, after they closed up shop, he said that the banks never placed the application with SBA. And I never checked him up on it. I don't know. But certainly the bank officer would almost have a record of all that stuff, too.
Okay. Is any other questions? Thank you, Mike. Appreciate coming down here. Dan, I know one question was not yours. One thing, is the Department of Law, your knowledge, at all investigating any of this?
Well, as general, the Department of Law does not involve itself in investigations unless it's been requested to do so by a law enforcement agency in the state. There are some very minor exceptions to that general statement. We have within the department one investigator, at least I have one investigator in the criminal side. So,
there's one in Fairbanks.
He's a consumer protection investigator.
Not Fairbanks.
Well, I guess, have you
He's
been...
He's an employee of the Department of State.
We have a letter, and I guess, a copy of a letter that was sent to Senator Orsini stating that the Department of Public Safety was investigating this. And have they requested you or your assistance or involvement at all?
No, they have not. And I think that investigation, whatever is involved at this point, and I asked Trick to correct me if I'm wrong, and this arose out of a conversation between I and the matter should be...
The investigation, the trooper's investigation is very preliminary. Number one, just before I wrote that letter, the thing was assigned up north. It was bounced back out of the trooper's division and given to the internal affairs investigator, a lieutenant who works directly for the commissioner, to investigate. And he contacted... I gave him the names of... primarily the name of... Steve Mazzara, who had made to me personally a number of serious allegations about it. I gave him a rundown of what Mr. Mazzara had told me, actually just on the phone yesterday, kind of up to the theory of the investigation, and gave him a whole history of the information I had on it, and he's been instructed to proceed with the thing, and he is supposed to, in the course of his investigation, contact Mr. Mazzara. And I'm not sure, maybe yourself, but Mr. Reed,
Steve,
okay, he was supposed to contact you also, and
incidentally, I would like to, if he's going to continue with, you know, with his investigation, which I assume he is, I'd like to also have copies of the tapes, or the transcript of these hearings available to him.
This will be transcribed, verbatim transcribed. We'd be glad to give it to you.
I'd like to add a little addendum to that. I would like to not have that request construed as a request on the part of the executive or this committee to conduct an investigation.
That
says nothing about whether or not.
You see, we have all this time, Dan, and we're just frittering away trying to figure out something to do. You know.
I can't stand it.
No, my point, of course, being is that, and it is partially in response to a question Mr. Carpenter raised, and whether in any way this type of a hearing could interfere with a potential prosecution somewhere down the road. The only way, in my judgment, that it could would be is if the committee is doing what it's doing at our request. And I want that to be absolutely clear on the record today. There is no request from the administration that the committee conduct an investigation. There's no objection on the part of the administration to the committee doing so, of course.
If you objected, it might be the best way to get us to do it.
Yeah, you're proceeding unilaterally.
And I think the question of making your tapes, findings, conclusions, et cetera, available to the executive is a legislative decision. It is one that should rest with this body and not be in response to a request from us for that at this point.
Well, I think it's a pretty simple matter for us. Whatever we have is public information. You know,
sure.
And so we'll make that available to anybody that is interested.
I can tell you briefly what I know about this, or at least what my contact with all of these many various issues were. As I mentioned previously, I became acquainted with Dr. Bess Matthews, who is the pathologist that ultimately went to work for Forensic Sciences, in November of 1975, during the course of a hit-and-run negligent homicide trial here in Juneau that I tried at that time. He, as it turned out, was the examining pathologist in the case. The elderly gentleman who was a victim had lived for a period of time, as a result of which he was in Seattle in a veterans hospital, and that's how that autopsy came to be conducted there. He came to Juneau and testified in that case, and I had conversations with him at that time about his profession and that sort of thing. About 8 months later in June, I had occasion to convene an annual district attorney's conference, which is sort of a training seminar that we do. And I brought Dr. Bess Matthews up here to conduct a one-day seminar as part of that in forensic pathology, where we invited police agencies, the Public Defender Agency, in addition to the staff of my offices. Around that time, as I indicated the other day, I had also been working on medical examiner legislation and ran ideas, drafts, etc., past Dr. Bess Matthews for feedback, for basically his opinion on certain provisions and for his knowledge on of how to set up a medical examiner system, basically, in terms of what should go into legislation. Since the time he came up here and put on that seminar, he became acquainted at that time to the legal community in the state. Defense attorneys began to use him in some cases. In other cases, some prosecutors consulted him for expert testimony or at least consultation in an expert witness capacity.
Was this when he was still in Seattle?
This was when he was still in Seattle, but no longer chief medical examiner. I believe that, if I recall correctly, he left that position shortly after he testified here in Juneau in the case that I referred to, which would have been November of 75, somewhere shortly after that. But by the time he came up in June of 76 for the DA's conference, he was in private practice. So he was coming to Alaska fairly frequently. I think as a result of that contact also, he performed some autopsies for in cases where Herb Soule, who some of you may know, who's currently the public defender in Micronesia, and he went out there and we put on a seminar out there and did some other things.
he brought to my attention at one point during conversations that we had that he was interested in moving to Alaska, and that he was negotiating with two separate firms in the Anchorage area who were interested in employing him as a pathologist, one being the Alaska Clinic and one being the people who eventually purchased the medical lab from Dr. Byrne. I didn't know any of these principals. Around April of last year, Pat Wellington, who at the time was director of state troopers, it was either came to see me in my office or discussed the issue of the crime lab with me down in Commissioner Burton's office. He had a proposed contract with him that Forensic Sciences had submitted as a proposal to continue the crime lab services that had always been provided to the Department of Public Safety by associated. What was the original name of your firm?
Alaska
Medical Laboratories. As I understood it, the department had always had a contractual relationship with Anchorage Medical Labs, but there had never been a contract. And Colonel Wellington was concerned about that and was interested in of course, continuing the relationship with some kind of a lab facility for basic crime lab analysis of drugs, blood specimens, things like that, and wanted to make sure that he was doing it correctly. He asked me to take a look at that contract, which I did, and we had an exchange of memoranda about it. I had a person on my staff work on it, and we revised it and sent him a proposed revision and suggested that he sit down with the proposed contractor and discuss it. He then got in touch with me and asked me that if I would participate in that meeting, which I did on one occasion when I happened to be in Anchorage. That was the first time that I met any of the principals that were involved, and I think that the meeting took place in Colonel Wellington's office, and Mr. Douglas was there, their attorney, Mr. Johnston, and I think one other individual, and I don't remember who that was. It was basically a negotiation session between them and the Department of Public Safety. I had raised a lot of questions under the contract about what we were really getting for this monthly fee, why we were paying an additional per analysis fee on top of the monthly fee, a variety of questions like that that I thought should be resolved before any kind of final contract should be entered into. It was pretty clear that in terms of the statutes that that contract was one for professional services. It was basically a sole source situation. There was no one else in the Anchorage area that had a capacity after Dr. Burns sold out to conduct a basic crime lab analysis of the types that I mentioned. As I recall, Colonel Wellington raised the issue of a lump sum payment at the beginning of a fiscal year, and what, if any, discount the contractor was willing to give in return for that. And the amount that was worked out through that exchange was the amount that appears in the contract, which was the amount that was paid on August 1st. Now, the contract, of course, provided that since it really started in May, that there were 2 months where they were paid for under the monthly fee, $11,000, whatever the contract amount was per month. And then on August 1st, they paid, after receiving their annual appropriation, a lump sum for the fiscal year from July 1 through June 30th. My only contact with the subject matter of the contract after that was very intermittent. It would generally be in response to complaints from one or more of my district attorney offices that certain problems were taking place in the handling of evidence. Bethel in particular seemed to be a problem, where a number of blood samples and a couple of drug samples that had been sent in to Anchorage for testing were lost. And they were lost somewhere between the evidence custodian at the Alaska State Troopers and the lab, who presumably performed the tests. So I would periodically be talking with Colonel Wellington about what was going on with the thing and were we having problems. And as far as I can recall, other than that, other than the fact that some evidence was lost in a couple of cases, everything was going fine, and I later heard, it seems to be late in the fall, that the company had folded, and can't place an exact date on it. It seems to me that it was shortly after Colonel Wellington's retirement, which I know was the end of November, when I first became aware of that. I was in Anchorage at that time, and I recall speaking with Bob Porterfield in our DA's office, who raised with me the question of this equipment and what had happened to it. He heard, as I recall, he indicated to me that the principals had purchased the repurchased it at basically something like a nickel on the dollar. A lot of the equipment that was involved in the lab work. And I said, gee, I didn't know anything about that, but I would discuss it with Colonel Anderson, who succeeded Colonel Wellington, which I did that same day, and was told by Colonel Anderson that in fact, the troopers had obtained most of the usable equipment that was available as a result of the company going under. And I suggested that he call Mr. Porterfield because he seemed to have contrary information, and that it might be advisable for him to find out, A, what that is, and B, that if Bob's information is incorrect, he might want to attempt to correct it. And he later told me that, as I recall, that he did. And I don't know if I ever asked Bob whether Anderson called him or not. At the same time, I asked Colonel Anderson what happened, and I got sort of a general description that they just simply seemed to overstretch themselves, that they attempted to involve themselves in too much. Apparently, in addition to the court system contract and to the public safety contract, they were also trying to develop a basic medical lab, which would have been sort of beyond the scope of either of those contracts, and that aspect of what they were trying to do was simply eating up the other two contracts. I don't know whether there's any validity to that or not. I also recall asking Colonel Anderson whether the circumstances, as he knew them, were such that we should look at filing a lawsuit. And he said, from what he knew, he didn't think so, that there wasn't anything there to sue for, but that if there was, he would let us know. The last conversation I had about it until very recently, when this subject arose in the context of the legislature, was very briefly one day in the Attorney General's office during a meeting. He and I and the Commissioner of Public Safety, and I think the Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety had, the subject came up, and I asked the Commissioner basically the same thing that I asked the Director of State Troopers, and he said he'd let me know. And I never heard anything further. In other words, whether it was something we should putting facts together on and considering a lawsuit on. And that's sort of where it stood when the subject was raised here some 2 to 3 weeks ago. I don't know how
did they discontinue the services they were providing or attempting to provide? If you could just 1 month and a year, you know.
What sticks in my mind is late November, early December, but the facts that I see here suggest otherwise, and I don't have personal knowledge of it. It's simply what I managed to pick up or what I can recall from.
During 1977, in any case?
Yes.
Okay, so that then if there were some action available either to the state or to Michael Byrne or anyone else, there's statute runs until 1983.
Sure.
I suppose everybody would like to know if there are any assets to go after.
What is it? Did you actually cancel the contract with them, or did they just go bankrupt?
No, they just went bankrupt. And
did they actually go bankrupt?
I don't believe they filed bankruptcy. Well,
how did they go bankrupt then? Or, you mean they just quit doing work for you?
Well, the information that I have is they terminated their employees.
What date did they terminate their employees?
I don't know. I'd have to find that out for you. I don't know.
Okay.
It was in mid to late November, because at the time that that we heard that their employees were going to be terminated, I believe one of their employees told one of our employees that they were being terminated. And we, of course, had a lot of evidence for ongoing cases that was in their hands, so we kind of mustered a special effort to get over there and inventory the evidence and straighten that out.
When was the auction?
Assume after November, December, January, I don't know. After the closure, as far as I know.
I assume it was after. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
One thing we want to try to get straightened out is when were all these dates that these things happened. It's not real clear to me. It except that the money was paid over sometime in August, and sometime shortly after that, the court system canceled out on it.
November.
First of November, I believe.
Maybe
even
the 31st, somewhere.
Okay. You're going to give us a letter on that.
Yeah.
Okay, was there any formal correspondence from the time when they went bankrupt from public safety to forensic sciences saying, you know, we hereby are not going to give you any more money for... Was there anything there? Any record of...
From us to them?
Yeah, or from them to you?
No, I don't believe so. There was an outstanding invoice that I mentioned for services above and beyond the contract. There was a provision in the contract for certain services that exceeded. We were holding a bill. We didn't pay it. We were subsequently billed by National Bank of Alaska, who wrote us a letter and said that we assumed the accounts receivable of Forensic Sciences Inc. and we'd like you to pay it. And we wrote them a letter and said, sorry, we've already paid that one.
So there's not really any record of when the thing terminated. It didn't really terminate. It just kind of stopped.
I think we can determine from our records, I think the real date is the date that we went in and started taking the evidence out of there, and that all occurred about the same time that employees were being laid off.
Could you give us a copy of whatever exists that's an actual record? Because part of the confusion in this, people just keep saying, well, it was November or August or something, and there's, you know, there is something in writing that indicates anything happened. I'd like to have a copy of that. Dan, I don't know if you have anything that indicates a date of when something happened.
No, the only thing I have is I have a file that shows what took place in the drafting of the contract. It went through a series of four or five drafts, and there was an exchange between the contract. I had no real contact with it after the contract before the contract was signed, after it was completed.
Here's a memorandum that indicates that on October 26th, Colonel Wellington had a meeting with Keith Douglas, who was the president of the Alaska Medical Lab, and at that time he advised him that they were experiencing serious financial problems.
October 26th. Can we have a copy of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there any other questions for Mr. Higgins? I guess I do have one. The point Larry raised earlier, I mean, the fact that we're asking you people and other people questions, if there was to be in the future prosecution or attempted prosecution, does that really interfere with anything or in terms of evidence or anything like that?
As long as my answer isn't construed as...
Well, you can make it a general...
encouragement.
Yeah, just
to do so. I can't envision that.
I mean, I have to talk about this incident, but I couldn't really think of any way that we could actually prevent something from happening that wouldn't happen anyway.
Absolutely not. And as I said the last time, I think the committee had a hearing on this particular subject. In my view, it's entirely appropriate for the committee.
Okay. Larry?
In the same vein, is there any reason in your mind why we should or should not proceed with seeking... permission to take sworn testimony compared to what we're presently doing?
No.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Mr. Smokeline, let's see, you're down here, right? We heard from you before. I don't know if you had. We aren't really giving testimony to the bill. You've obviously heard what we were talking about. Do you have any information you'd like to?
I could. I'd like to reply to a couple of remarks.
Okay. Why don't you come up to the table and identify yourself?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carpenter, and I have to go to the meeting in about 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. We're trying to find out is, you know, the facts about what happened, and not about who thinks what about who. So if you can give us any information about what you know of happened in relation, we'd be glad to hear that.
Mr. Chairman?
I think Mr. Carpenter was...
Go ahead and identify yourself.
My name is Lee Moldine, and I work at Evergreen Memorial Chapel in Anchorage. I was here a couple of weeks ago to speak to this committee. And some of the committee members here may be aware of it, and some may not. I'm sure that Mr. Carpenter is, but... Because of the nature of our work, we are privy to a lot of information about what goes on in the death investigation system here in the state. And because of that information, we were very concerned about the medical examiner bill. And I don't know if you want me to rehash what I had to say to the committee last time or not.
I don't think
there's anyone here that wasn't here then. But I did want to reply to a couple of remarks that were made. It may have been construed that Mr. Frank was haranguing the people from the Alaska court system. He was trying to get their attention because we were having some problems. One of those problems was a great delay in getting death certificates filled out and signed, a problem which we had never had until this particular group started doing this work. And that is a serious problem with us because families come to us wanting copies of the death certificates so they can get insurance benefits and that sort of thing. And we were experiencing delays of weeks and sometimes over a month getting certificates back. Now, sometimes I think, you know, that's understandable, but when it starts happening often, then it becomes a problem. And when we've got as many as 12 or 15 families calling us every day wondering where the death certificates are, well, we're catching some heat. So we wanted to talk to people in the court system about that. One other problem, Mr. Frank, before the contract was even let with Forensic Sciences Incorporated, was talking to Mr. Barrier on the phone. I believe it was on a Friday afternoon. And he said, okay, Mr. Frank, put it all in writing and everything, and we'll consider it. And by Monday morning, that contract had been let. And Mr. Frank was pretty upset about it. Kind of felt that he was just put off. And I don't blame him. Now, anything in addition to that, he would have to explain to you. But I don't think we ever called any of those people names or that we said they weren't capable of providing the service or anything like that until we got to the point where we were getting the delays and having the problems. The other thing that I might like to mention is that we went to considerable expense to provide some good facilities for the state to use for these examinations. And there are a lot of days when there aren't any autopsies, and there are some days when there are five or six. And you need to have adequate facilities with good lighting and good ventilation, and facilities that are easy to keep clean. And some 4 or 5 years after we built these facilities, the state all of a sudden turned around and said, we don't want to use your facilities, which leaves them not just sitting there in their lap. And they didn't even want to talk to us about it.
Hey, do you have any information that, you know, the basic thing we're concerned about is if there was any possible wrongdoing or such, that so what happened at the point when the company went bankrupt and the state lost some money, evidently? Do you have any information about the series?
I don't have any more information about that than you have already.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Okay, well, I guess we'll adjourn because I don't want to be all alone. Okay. Thank you, everybody. That's the date.